We're going to talk about using the F and the LSD for orthogonal designs. It's a great warm-up, and there's a lot of times when if you're working with somebody else's data or you're working in a hurry or you want to ask some non-standard questions, that the LSD will give you direct tests of things that can be difficult to get otherwise. Then we're going to look at the non-orthogonal design analysis using the estimated means follow-ups, show you some examples of both, send you off to learn important stuff on the homework. All right, so we've worked with the 2x2, which is the basic factorial. Larger designs is often used for the same reason that we use multiple condition one-factor designs. You may need more than two IV conditions to test a research hypothesis. You might want multiple experimental conditions, multiple treatment conditions, or you might want to take a multiple element treatment apart. Most of the time when we identify a treatment, whether it's a social treatment, an educational treatment, a clinical treatment, medical, tip your treatment type, it is not a thing. It's a combination of things. And we usually have two questions, and how we order those questions is often dictated to us by our surroundings. What are the real causal agents, and what combinations work? Both of those are going to require us to take things apart, to try alternative versions. May need more than just two conditions. You might want to test the replicability of an independent variable's effect across more than two settings or situations. If you're testing the generalizability across just two conditions, then all you need is a two-condition variable there. But very often we are interested in multiple conditions, and so that second variable, that generalization variable, has multiple conditions. So there's just the idea that we can take a 2x2 design and we can make it larger by adding conditions to one, to the other, or to both main effects. When we label factorial designs, it's usually in terms of identifying first the number of rows, then the number of columns. But be careful. And when you're working in SPSS, you want to make sure that you have things lined up the way you want to in terms of the order in which you list the variables. The order in which you list the variables determines what the tables look like. And so you just want to make sure that the tables are what you think they are. Check all your labels every time. This is just a couple of slides taken from when we first talked about K-groups designs, talking about the different ways the treatment conditions differ. They may differ quantitatively, how often you're receiving therapy, how many practice trials. They may differ categorically or qualitative, or they may be trying to take those combinations apart. Remember, though, the secret is always to be sure the selection of conditions matches the research hypothesis. You ought to be starting with a hypothesis. The hypothesis tells you what comparisons you need. The comparisons tells you what conditions you need. That's your design. We do have a tendency of drawing boxes, filling in labels, and then figuring out what hypotheses we can test. You just want to make sure that you're not missing anything interesting when you do it that way. We also talked about different kinds of control conditions. The no treatment control, often the standard place to start, but imagine that you just came up with a new psychotherapeutic treatment. Showing that your psychotherapeutic treatment works better than nothing might not be enough to get it adopted, either theoretically or pragmatically. And so the question becomes, to what do you compare it in order to test your hypotheses? And different comparisons are necessary to test different hypotheses. There may be a standard treatment out there. There might be a best practice. And then one of the things we use a lot are what I call pseudo-treatment controls, or all but treatment controls. We figure out what is that element of the treatment that we think is the primary causal agent. And then we isolate that. And we try and figure out whether that condition is enough or whether the other things are a substitute. When you start working your way through these really, really carefully, you come up with the idea that basically there's two kinds, nested and non-nested conditions, where one condition is a subset of another, or when one condition is a substitute from another. So all that stuff you learned about nested and non-nested regression models is the same basic logic that we apply to coming up with the right control group to test a research hypothesis. And if you think about it that way, it'll make things simpler because it tells you the most direct possible test. So here's just a couple examples. When we talk to each other about factorial designs, we talk about designs and hypotheses and results by drawn boxes. It's all about boxes and pointies. So here's just a couple to play with. Males and females completed the task either under instructions to work quickly, work accurately, or work as quickly as possible without making unnecessary errors, or no instructions. And that gives us this design. We look into that design and we have got a whole bunch of effects. We've got the main effect of gender, which is represented by these marginal means. We've got the main effect of instruction, which is represented by these marginal means. We have the interaction of the two, which is captured in those eight cell means. We have four other gender effects in this study. We have the gender effect under work quickly condition, accurately condition, both condition, or the no instruction condition. We also have two different sets of instruction effects, one for men and the other for women. So there's all of that information in there. We've got eight conditions, so we've got 7 degrees of freedom. There's 7 questions that we can ask, and of course, we have more than that. And so the question becomes one of, when do you start worrying about alpha inflation? When do you start correcting for having made more comparisons than you have degrees of freedom to mess around with? This is a real study. I was fascinated by this. This was in our stack of 400 factorial designs. Folks completed a depression questionnaire either under instructions to respond like someone with acute depression, respond like someone with chronic depression, or respond like somebody who is trying to fake being depressed. Yes, the instructions are to fake faking depression. Participants were either clinical psychologists, clinical PhD students, or volunteers from a local social club who rocked at faking depression. Absolutely rocked at it. The ones that sucked the most were the clinical PhD students. The psychologists had seen enough of it. What happened was that the clinical psychology PhD students didn't show differences across these conditions. To them, depression was pretty much depression. To the average age of like 84 in the women's social club, they knew just what these three things looked like. And they could mimic any of them at will. It was a fascinating piece of research. And this is what the design looks like. Now, the big difference between these two designs in terms of the statistical analysis necessary is that if we find a significant gender effect, we don't have to follow up on it because there's only two conditions. If we find a significant F for comparing the male and female estimated marginal means, we're done. Bigger one's bigger. We're good. Down here, we have to then follow up and decide what is the pattern among the acute depression, chronic depression, fake depression, marginal means. And then we have to decide if that pattern matches the pattern for each type of participant. So there's lots and lots and lots of bits and pieces to these larger factorial designs. And the most important advice I can give you is slow down. Take your time, write them all out, articulate all of it. In fact, in the way that the homework is set up, it actually sets all that up for you because this is not what people naturally do. They scroll a whole bunch of shit down on a piece of paper and then try and sort it out later. But what you want to be doing is you want to keep track. Here we're going to look at the simple effect of marital status for males and for females. And for each of those pairwise comparisons, we want to know what's the research hypothesis, what's the pairwise result, what's the effect size, and do the data support the research hypothesis or not. One of the real utilities of the effect size is that we know very often an interaction pattern is effects that are in the same direction but different size. And so having that quantitative estimate of that pairwise effect size can be an important part of communicating certain data patterns. Then we come down here and we do the whole thing in the other direction, because now we're looking at the gender effect at each marital status. Two different depictions of exactly the same interaction. This one will be used if it turns out that our research hypotheses are about how single and married people are different, and if that's different than males and females. This will depict the interaction pattern and test the research hypotheses if we have our hypotheses expressed is how genders differ and how that's different for different people of different marital status. Depending upon how that interaction is articulated in its hypothesis, one set of simple effects is the more direct test. That's why that simple effects pink thing is the most important one to go back and hit a couple of times as you're working through this, because that is the hardest element of this part of your learning, is knowing exactly what set of simple effects gives us the direct test of the research hypothesis and the direct expression of the pattern. Yes?
Yeah, I had trouble with that on the two things too. Could you explain again how you know which simple effect is the most direct test?
Okay. There's three different situations, and the way you tell is different for each of them. So, the one is, I've got a direct research hypothesis statement. If I said to you, males will have higher scores than females if they're single and if they're married, but they will be equal if they are previously married. Okay? Now, if that were my research hypothesis, I'm looking at a gender effect for single, a gender effect for married, and a gender effect for previously married. So when I do those three simple effects, are the three of those simple effect of gender for different married status or a simple effect of marital status for different genders? Which comparison am I making over and over and over?
Gender.
So I'm going to be looking at the simple effect of gender. Okay? Well, that's not always what you get. Sometimes you're supposed to know what simple effect they're going to care about in the factorial design because that was the effect they cared about earlier. Let's say that the previous research looked at just single. And among single, I found that males had a higher score than females. Now, in this study, I want to add the married and the previously married conditions. So this is my old independent variable, and marital conditions is my new independent variable. So the first thing I'm going to want to look at in this design is I'm still going to want to look at single males versus single females, because that's the replication of the earlier study. And when I look at this, I'm looking at the simple effect of
gender.
Then, to see if my results generalized to other marital categories, I'm going to take a look at whether there's how men and women relate in the married category and how men and women relate in the previously married category. And each time, I'm going to be looking at the simple effect of gender for each marital status. The other combination that you run into is when the interaction and the main effect are combined. For example, if I said men are going to have higher ratings than females, more so if married. Well, when I say men are going to give a higher rating than women, that's a main effect. It's only mentioned in one variable. But it's specifically the main effect of gender. Then when I say that this is more true if they're married, now I'm going to look at the simple effect of gender for each marital status. And in the stack of 400 and several hundred thousand that we've looked at since then, every expression of an interaction pattern fits into one of these three. Either it is directly stated, and your job, figure out what comparison is being made over and over, that's the simple effect. Or, if we've started with a single factor design and expanded to a factorial, the original or old independent variable is going to be the simple effect looked at in the factorial design. And if I'm bundling together a main effect and an interaction, then the main effect is going to correspond with the simple effect I use to describe the interaction. And so you sort of articulate those three things to yourself and you practice for a couple of years. Because that is probably some of the most useful help that I lend to people, which is figuring out how are we going to directly test the research hypothesis as articulated. Because most of the time, people know how they want to characterize it. They're even pretty good at drawing the arrows. But that next step, and you know, the idea is that if you've got men and women, and you've got married and single and previously married, and you say to yourself, well, among the married people, the males are going to have a bigger rating. You're done. Unless there's something really squirrely in the statement of the research hypothesis, you know already, only having heard part of the hypothesis, that we're going to be looking at the simple effect of gender for every marital status. But if I said this, but if somebody said to you, you know, the married people are just give lower ratings than the single or the previously married. Now I know that I'm going to be looking at the simple effect of marital status over and over and over for each gender. But I can stand here and say that. But you still have to experience it and get used to pulling it out. I have this great t-shirt that I used in the t-shirt show this year. It says, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. And this is a great example of that. Once you can sort of articulate those three rules, there's still lots of reps before it's an absolute constant. So don't be discouraged. Okay? How do we do?
Good.
Something else? You sure?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so all of this, both in hypothesis testing selection and when you're actually working through the process, the most important part is be patient. Do all the pieces every time. Get out the piece of paper. Write all the stuff down. You'll prevent making all sorts of painful mistakes.